Welcome to the Mojo Podcast with me, Richard Stokes. This week we're going to talk about social media. And for all its drawbacks, social media has been keeping many of us connected and entertained during isolation and lockdown. Numbers are massively up and people are getting very, very creative online. Just look at TikTok, which has really taken off during COVID-19. And with influencers and creators more limited in where they can actually go in the world, they need to get creative to entertain and inspire their followers. So I thought I'd speak to someone this week who's very active on social media to understand the effects on their mojo of living much of your life very publicly. Joanna Shimwell is a creator, farmer, businesswoman, and adventure sports fanatic. She shares her life on the farm, on her bike, and in freezing cold lakes with thousands of followers on Instagram and YouTube. On this episode, she very candidly shares her mojo story from an intimidated teenager and bullied employee who battled bouts of depression, through to how plugging back into the source of a family farm in Derbyshire helped reframe her own aspirations in life, and how a love of flying down mountains and diving into cold rivers and lakes has helped rebuild her confidence. As she says, toughing it out on the mountain has helped toughing it out in business. We talk about the cycle of life on the farm, the importance of self-care, and how she seeks to inspire followers to think about the benefits of exercise, good food, and harmony in life. It was a fascinating conversation for me, and Joanna's energy and strength shine through. Amazingly, it was one of her first podcasts, but I'm sure it won't be her last. She was a great guest. I hope you enjoy it, and if you do, please do share it with friends. You can also subscribe to get new episodes each week. And while you're there, please do leave a 5-star rating and write a short review on Apple Podcasts. Enjoy the show. So, welcome back to the Mojo Podcast. And this week, it is one farm talking to another. As some of you know, I live on a farm or a finca here in Ibiza. And my guest today, Joanna Shimwell, lives and works on a farm in Derbyshire, in the UK. So from the sunshine of Ibiza to, I think, the rain of Derbyshire. Hello, Joanna, and how are you?
Hello, thank you for having me on. Yes, I'm very well today. We have got rain today, but it's much needed, so I'm not making any complaints.
Yeah, well, I think anyone who really understands the land that they're on, when the rain comes, it's probably quite a pleasing sight, isn't it?
We did have such a wet winter, and then spring has been very dry so far, so a bit of rain is just going to freshen everything up. And the other day it rained quite a lot for most of the day, and then the sun came out in the evening and all the leaves were steaming and the light was reflecting off them, and it was just magical. You could tell that nature was just kind of going, boom, we're going to grow now. It was amazing.
That sounds glorious, and already painting a picture for us. Thank you, Joanna. And as I said, I always start out this way, and I'd really like to get a sense from you, a level, you know, 1 to 10. How is your mojo today?
So I think my mojo is probably about an 8, I would say, today. My mood is, I'm quite an up and down person. My mood does go, my mojo goes up and down. This week's been most fluctuating, but I'd say today I'm feeling a solid 8, maybe 8.5.
Great. That sounds good. But that, so that up and down, that fluctuation is something that is that the time we're in now with COVID, or is that something that you recognize in yourself?
I am quite a up and down person, I think. I just have quite a wide range of feelings and emotions, and my mood changes quite a lot, but I'm getting better at kind of leveling out. It's not specifically related to current affairs or anything. It's more just how I'm feeling that week, how I'm coping with things, my energy levels, whether I've had enough sleep, that kind of thing.
And so kind of getting into that, you're probably almost starting to define for you, and everyone's got their own definitions of what mojo is, but what when I say that word, what's coming out for you?
So mojo is actually something that I have talked about in terms of relating to my mood for quite a while, actually. I do say, I've lost my mojo if I'm feeling not very good within myself. So mojo for me, I would say it's hard to exactly pinpoint, but I would say it's kind of a harmonious state where I feel like everything is kind of in a nice amount of balance. So mojo is being well rested, feeling quite okay about myself, being in control of my mood and my emotions, having good relationships with people around me. I'd say that's what it is.
I love that sense of harmony that you're recognizing.
Yeah,
and you've got,
key,
as you say, you
the
know
key word would be harmony.
A beautiful thing to anchor it into, and you just knowing you need that balance, that several things in check to feel right. I'm on my mojo. My mojo is where it needs to be for today to be a good day.
Yeah, and I think that I focus quite a lot on my own sort of self-care, and I think that if I'm not taking care of myself properly, then I feel that would take my mojo a bit out of harmony, a bit out of balance.
On that care, is it that, I know you're working physically too hard and not looking after other sides of things? Is that what you mean by that sort of balance that you need to strike?
So I have my own business, and I think that when you work for yourself, there is no sort of on and off switch, and particularly working on a farm, the farm ultimately decides when you work, your hours that you work. It's not about you going, I've signed off now, I've finished for the day, I've finished for the week. That doesn't exist in self-employment or in farming. So I think that there can be a tendency for me to put other things before my own self, but I'm getting better at making sure that I do put myself quite firmly in the center of my own world, because if I'm not going to take care of myself, who else is going to look after me? And if I'm not well, then I can't do all of the other things around me that I need to do as well as I want to. So I have to prioritize my self-care, and that's eating right, that's fitting in time for myself, movement, meditation, those types of things.
So you've got a really good awareness of, you know, as you say, you've got to look after yourself first before you can look after the people around you. And in your world, you've got animals around you as well, because you know it's a sheep and cattle farm, is that right?
Yes.
Tell us a bit about Dale Farm and the business.
Yeah, so it's a small farm in Derbyshire. We've nearly finished lambing now. We've been lambing for the month of April, and so that's a really busy time. And we also have Highland cows. We've got 10 breeding cows. And they will be calving throughout May. So anytime now we could have Highland calves, which is quite exciting. And then we're also a diversification farm. So we've got a campsite business as well that exists alongside. And we get people visiting the campsite that want to see a working farm and be close to farm animals and that kind of thing.
Got it. So lots of different elements
on
the farm. Lots
and
of things
also
going on.
We sell the meat from the animals that we have. They're all outdoor living, outdoor reared, very high welfare animals. And so foodie people come that want to come and enjoy the produce from the farm. If you're into your sort of local produce and your food miles and grass-fed meat, then that, I think that's quite nice. If I go places, I love to do that. You know, like if I was away somewhere and I could try anything that was local, I'd love it. So the story behind it, I think, is important for some people.
Yeah, absolutely. That you know, I think in this, obviously we're recording this during COVID-19, but I think one thing that might come out of this is more of a conscious consumerism, even more than we already have. And absolutely, what you speak to people wanting to know the authenticity and where their food has come from, and really caring about that. And that, I guess, that's got to really matter to you as a business.
It does, yes. And I do think that there's quite a big divide. I think there's probably a large proportion of people that don't care, that don't have any awareness, and they just see food as food, and the cheaper the better. And then there's the other section of society that really are very bothered about the impact of the food that they're eating, and the people that are producing it, the welfare of the people, as you know, are they getting a fair price for the products and that kind of thing. So we're trying to tap into the market of people that are prepared to pay more, but for a much, much different high quality product.
They know exactly where the products come from, how it was treated, the animal was treated. And what's really interesting, what you said there, the people that were involved in rearing those animals. That's not maybe not something we always think about too much, but I love that sense of thinking about the farmers, the people involved in the food chain as well.
Yeah, because with the kind of supermarket trend, farmers can almost get cut out. They can get a really bad deal for the produce that they're, you know, working 365 days a year to produce, because they're getting squeezed by the supermarkets. And so I do use supermarkets. I'm not gonna lie, but I do try and support local businesses because I think that if you can shop direct from the supplier, then they're going to get a much better deal than if you go down the supermarket route or aisle, if you like.
So when we were talking, obviously before recording today, and as with a lot of my guests now, we haven't met yet, but I've followed your Instagram account and your YouTube, which is very open. There's a lot of honesty, I think, is the word that comes through for me in terms of the story you're telling, almost, and vulnerability as well, actually. And we were. That's what kind of linked us up. And we were talking about kind of your story and your journey. And you talked about where you are right now and the Dale Farm business as it stands. But you told me about kind of a few years ago when, and you know, we're talking about the Mojo podcast, when your mojo was particularly low, and your response to that. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. So I found that as I was growing up, going through school, my confidence in myself was going down and down and down. And when I graduated from university, I was in a period of depression. And also, it was a time where the job market was not in a good place. It was in 2008, and it was the start of the recession, and things were not looking good in the economy. So it was a very unstable time for me as a person, and it was also very unstable economically within the UK. And I sort of set out on my way trying to be self-employed, which was something that I was really determined to try and make a success of. And I did okay for a while, and I made a lot of sacrifices and I learned a lot of lessons. But the crux of it was that I couldn't make it work cash flow wise. So I ended up jumping ship and taking a job. And within a really short space of time, my employer kind of took a dislike to me, and we ended up parting ways within 5 months. And my confidence at that point was at ultimate rock bottom. In my personal life, I'd had some really bad relationships, quite toxic relationships, and I'd been drinking excessively, taking drugs sort of socially, but even on my own, taking drugs to deal with my depression, you know, self-medicating, if you like. And I realized, this was at about age 25 or 26, I realized that I'd kind of lost everything. I hadn't got any sort of career or job anymore. I had no idea what my talents were. I thought I had nothing to offer anybody. And so Mojo was like all-time low. It was my ground zero, if you like. And since then, my journey has been to find my way in a really natural, organic kind of process, and build up my confidence through exercise, and trying to get fit and healthy and get a fit and healthy mindset as well as a fit and healthy body. And it's gone from strength to strength, but on a very gradual scale.
So that sounds like a very tough, I mean, not just a period of time, but several years that you went through, which must have been very difficult. But what kind of kept you striving, kept you pushing on for, you know, knowing that this time would pass?
Well, I'm a big believer of one day at a time, or even 1 hour at a time, if you can't see the bigger picture. And I certainly couldn't see the bigger picture for me at all. So it was just a case of get through the next hour, then get through the next hour and take it from there. And what I was fortunate enough to have was being back at the farm. I live in this wonderful place in the countryside with nature all around me. And I really do think that being away from the city, away from the bad influences, and back to where I grew up as a child, really kind of healed me and allowed me to come back to my true self, like the child Joanna, before all of these traumas and things that sort of scarred and hurt me throughout my teenage years, and had an impact on me. I kind of went back to the true self, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so you're almost plugging back into the source of both the family and the environment around you, that obviously that's where you were born and raised, I'm guessing.
Yes.
And that nurtured you, I think the word I'm probably looking for.
Yeah, and I started working, I had no job and I really felt low confidence. I certainly wasn't in a position to go out and try and get work. I was depressed. I'd been to the doctor. I'd been offered antidepressants. I said no. I didn't want to take anything medically, chemically. So I was having counselling and cognitive behavioural therapy, which helped me hugely, and that started me on my mindfulness journey, which was really transformative and continues to be transformative in how I cope with my everyday life challenges, ups and downs. But I was able to start grafting on the farm, physical work. And I do think that there is something that's really good for the soul, you know, about physical work. Hmm. And from there, working on the farm with the animals, it's hugely rewarding to me. I've always loved animals. I feel like a connection and a sensitivity towards animals. And then from there, say to my dad, can I develop the campsite business? I see that there's an opportunity for me here. And so now I've kind of become this businesswoman, which I never would have imagined at the beginning of the journey that's what I was going to be, but I am. So it's great.
Going back to the source and almost building your confidence back up by being in a place of love, by the sounds of it, and being surrounded by, as you say, the animals that you really cared for. So when you, so that conversation with your dad, take us back to that, because I'm guessing he's a farmer all his life, and yeah, you know, you've come back and you say, right, want to set up this camping business. Was it as easy as that? Was he like, yeah, just go and do it? Or was there a bit of, you know, a bit of negotiation needed, or a bit of you had to prove yourself?
Well, I'd been working on the farm for that summer period, and the backstory is that my parents actually started the campsite when I was a child. So they'd been camping at the farm in some form for sort of, I don't know, nearly 20 years previously. Mm. But since my mum had left, the camping side of things hadn't been developed, hadn't been any reinvestment. So it was very, very basic. And dad's not really a marketing guy, you know, he's a farming guy. And so he wasn't the ideal person to kind of keep the business moving forward. And I was there with my eyes kind of fully open, being able to actually see what was happening. And I realized that it was ridiculously quiet in terms of how much potential there was, as opposed to how many customers were coming through the door. And so I said, Dad, can I get involved a bit? So for the first year, I was just getting involved, doing what I could, helping him to get more business and giving him the money. And then at the end of that year, I said, can I maybe have it as my business? Would that be okay with you? And we'll negotiate a rental agreement for the campsite. Would that suit? And he was, you know, really grateful, eternally grateful that he said yes. So from that point, it was then a position for me to look to be investing in. So me and my boyfriend Nick have spent the last 4 years since then working as, you know, hard as we can and reinvesting in that. And that's really kind of grown to this point now where we've got a really clear vision for the business and where we're going with it, or at least we did have until we realized that this pandemic was going to have a big impact on this year. But going forwards, I think hopefully it's just a pause button and we can return to normality hopefully next year.
Yeah, I mean, I guess anyone working globally in the travel and tourism sector has been absolutely hammered by COVID-19. But as you say, you've taken a long-term view to the farm and to the campsite in terms of how you're investing.
Well, we've got no choice really. I mean, I have found it really difficult. Initially, back in March, I definitely felt like I was grieving everything that we'd planned. You know, I think that I'm quite a routine person. I kind of like things to happen perhaps as I expect them to happen, and I sort of imagined that we would be opening in April. We were finishing off our building project, which is a huge investment for this year, and then all of that just completely fell apart, and so it was a big shock. And I had to come to terms with that loss, that that wasn't going to happen. I think that I've been really fortunate that I have been able to get stuck into the farm work, because it's been a wonderful distraction from the negative impact of what's happened on the campsite business. And I try not to, I'm not massively interested in financial things. Like I don't know how to explain. I'm not massively motivated by money really. So I've tried not to think about the money side of it. We lead quite a simple life here. So it's not like I'm financed up to the hilt and I've got all sorts of flash things that I need to keep up with appearances. We live quite basically. So it's more just a case of, well, we can carry on as we are. We're not going to have much money coming in, but hopefully we can just keep things ticking over here until we can reopen. And then once we reopen, we can start the ball rolling again and sort things out. But certainly financially, Nick and I have had to put all of our savings in to keep the building project going. And we've reached a point, I think today we actually had a meeting, and we're going to probably have to get a loan. But looking at the blessings, loans are being offered quite readily by banks at the moment because of the virus. So it's like, yes, the virus has had a bad impact, but we're very grateful that there are various different things in place to try and make sure that business people can get through this and get out the other side of it.
Yeah, it seems like there's quite a lot of different supports in place, depending on what country you're obviously in. But the UK's introduced quite a lot, which hopefully is helping with stress levels of business owners. And how are you finding? I mean, it sounds like this beautifully simple life you're describing, it doesn't sound full of stress, but is it? And how do you deal with that when those stress levels do come up?
Well, I think that we've been lucky this year that the weather has been a beautiful spring, as I mentioned earlier on. We've had this beautiful spring, and so that has been very healing, I think, for my stress levels. When the weather's bad and you're working on a farm outdoors, and it obviously has a negative impact on you if the land is suffering, if the animals are suffering, that's bad. That's going to add to your stress levels. But the weather has been really kind, so I feel like in the midst of all of this horrible stress to do with the pandemic, nature has been very soothing and healing. And I've really every day woken up with gratitude for the fact that it could have been a hell of a lot worse if the weather had decided to not play ball as well. Because we've had a really wonderful time lambing. It's been a pleasure really to get on with it, and to be able to potter around outside when I'm not working has been gorgeous. So I really appreciate that, and that's helped me because I love to be outdoors. You know, I love to exercise, keep fit while swimming, just walking out in the countryside. So we're permitted at the moment to do one piece of sort of daily exercise, but I can walk around the sheep to check on them, and that's just enough exercise really for me. So it's definitely been a blessing to be able to take exercise outdoors and have lovely weather. They're the main things that I would do to alleviate my stress. Being sort of trapped in a building with the rain lashing and dark skies would have made my mental state a lot worse. I can definitely tell you that.
You're just touching on there a lot of the outdoor pursuits that you do, and anyone that follows your Instagram or your YouTube, you'll see a lot of this. And I think it probably was because I love swimming in the sea. Now, I don't swim at temperatures like I think you're going to tell us about in a second, but that's probably what first attracted me to your Instagram page out of the Outdoor Swimming Society, I think it was. So can you tell us a little bit about the swimming? And I know mountain biking is a massive thing for you. Tell us what you're doing, as you say, from an exercise point of view.
So I I love adventure, the spirit of adventure, and I love a physical challenge. So anything that I can turn my hand to, really, that's going to challenge me. And I started off mountain biking, and I still, whenever we travel for the past few years, we've always taken our bikes with us, and we're off up mountains with our bikes, having amazing experiences. That's just the dream for me, is being free on my bike on a mountain for the whole day. Sometimes being terrified and being challenged way, way past my limit of what I feel comfortable with. But I feel like that's all part of what I really, what makes me feel alive, if you know what I mean. So I don't really feel motivated to kind of keep riding the same trails. I'm like wanting to explore, wanting to see new places and really push the limits of my comfort zones. There's definitely an element of challenge, mental and physical, so tricky terrain, going into the unknown, if you know what I mean. And then the similar aspect, I would say, with wild swimming, it's the challenge of it. It's overcoming the mental challenge of thinking, I can't do this, like it's going to be too cold, or I'm not sure if I feel comfortable. Is this an okay place to swim? And so in my head, maybe I've got these doubts that I can't do it. And then when I prove to myself that I can, it's such an adrenaline rush and an endorphins rush, and you just feel incredible. And it's all part of building my own self-confidence, I think. So my exercise and the adventures that I've been on have actually made me feel more capable and confident in my own ability in everyday life. And in business even, it's helped me. I think toughing it out on the mountain has helped me tough it out in business. Because you struggle and you suffer, and then you come out the other side and you feel good afterwards.
So you're building up this incredible resilience, by the sounds of it, and belief and confidence in yourself by taking on these, you know, these very intense challenges, by the sounds of it. I mean, I just wanted to get a sense from you of, so when you're on a lake shore, and I've seen pictures of you going into glacial lakes, and I don't know, you'll tell us what the temperature is. How are you psyching yourself up for that? Because I imagine your brain and is telling your body, just don't do this. It's cold and it's potentially very, very dangerous. What are you doing?
Well, so for example, we went to Italy in January of this year, just before all of this kicked off with the coronavirus. We were lucky to get a trip in our camper van. We were driving around Italy, Slovenia, and it was wonderful. It was a perfect place for wild swimming, if you like, cold water. So I think the temperatures were sort of 6 degrees and then under. Quite often they were 5 or 4 degrees. And then on the last day, there was definitely ice. So it was actually a frozen lake. And we checked it out the night before because I was so excited to try and break through ice. I've seen other people doing it, and I just was like, that would be a dream for me. So we went to check it out and see how thick it was to see if we could actually get through it, if that makes sense. And then that evening, all I could think about was going to sleep, and then the next day waking up and just breaking through the ice. It was like a bit of it's just a thrill, I think. So for me, the cold, I can put all of that to one side because I'm in pursuit of this thrill seeking experience. So the discomfort goes out the window. Doesn't really feel like discomfort. It's more like I want to experience this memorable moment. And so in the most extreme cold temperatures, where it's been so cold, and I mean, like, your fingers, you start to lose the feeling in them altogether, your skin is burning, everything goes really numb, and it's a strange sensation, but you feel incredible afterwards.
Right. So in the moment when you're in that ice cold lake, is there pleasure in that, or does the pleasure come when you've got out, you've survived it, you've done it, you've completed it?
There's pleasure in the moment because you're deep breathing, and generally you're in a beautiful location. That's what motivates me, is being in this amazing location. So I'm looking around me and I'm thinking, drink this in, breathe deeply, and just remember this moment. Because there are times when I'm stressed as hell running the campsite, feeling so overwhelmed, and I go back to those moments on a mountain or in a lake, and it brings me back to my calm feeling of just being able to kind of ground myself again and be calm.
that sense of what you're getting from the cold water swimming just sounds really amazing for your well-being, as you've described. Now, just switching gears slightly, Joanna, obviously, and of course, what brought us together was your Instagram presence, and I know you're a significant YouTuber as well. So I'd just like to talk a little bit about what you're doing with social media, because obviously there's a big conversation around social media in terms of benefits and drawbacks for people's mental well-being. I'd love to get into what it's doing for you personally and what it's doing for your businesses.
Well, I think personally, and the reason why I started using Instagram was just a creative way to express myself. And that's all it's ever really intended to have been, is just an outlet for me to express myself freely. And when I first started, I didn't have any of my actual real friends on there. It was just completely meeting strangers through pictures, if that makes sense. And then as it's grown now, it's the lines have become more blurred, and I have friends and contacts on there that I know in real life. And I've made some great friendships and relationships with people, some that I've gone on to meet and others that I haven't met, but I still consider to be great friends and great supports. So I feel very privileged, very lucky that I get to use it on a daily basis, and that I have a wonderful platform to be able to share my passions with people and to try and inspire people to get active, to look after themselves, and also to not be afraid of showing the highs and lows of life, which is what I do.
And I think I mentioned this right at the beginning, but I think your Instagram especially is, I know that one a little bit more, but you are very open. You show real vulnerability on it. So how has that had any drawbacks, or is it all positive that you're being as honest and open on a very open platform, a public platform?
I can't think of any real negatives. I mean, sometimes you may get the odd comment that you don't particularly like, but I think that's to be expected, because as a cross-section of society, not everybody is going to like what you do. I would say the most negative things that I experience are more linked to vegan people who don't agree with me being a farmer and raising animals for meat. And I kind of get comments like, how can you cuddle a lamb when you know that you're going to kill it? And you're, you know, animal murderer and things like that. But I think it's a lack of understanding of the different ways that you can produce food. And I have kind of learned to deal with it okay. I'm trying to educate people, and I get so much good feedback, so many good comments from people saying that they're really interested in seeing my perspective on farming life, and showing that you can really take good care of the animals, and it's not all about them being in a dark shed en masse. You know, there are different ways that the animals can live their lives, and ours certainly have a very happy, nice life when they're here.
Got it. So you're shining a light on all you can shine a light on, I guess, which is your life right in front of you. And it seems to me that you're very transparent about showing the positives, but also the negatives. Now, I on the farming side, I know recently, obviously you're in the lambing season, so there's lots of images of lovely, cute lambs running around. But also, and what I really respect is you're not scared of showing this, is lambs that are born, you know, dead or in a really bad state, and it's all very visceral and real, and you show that.
Yeah, and I think that is what people need to see in social media, not just in relation to farming, but on a broader scale. There's this talk about social media being only highlights, like only when you're enjoying yourself, only when you're in a happy mood or being your best self. But I definitely find that with the people that I engage with, there is more openness being introduced all the time. People are not afraid to say, look, I've got mental health problems. I want to talk about the fact that I'm struggling in this area, that area. And that's normalizing it for people, so that they're like, okay. And occasionally I might get a message of somebody to say, I can't believe that you would talk about this on social media, but it's really helpful, so thank you. And I'm thinking, well, that's great. If I've managed to help one person feel like they're not alone, then I've achieved something.
So it's that sense, you mentioned the word inspiring before. If you can inspire someone to feel differently about themselves or look at the world a bit differently because of, you know, something you've been able to share and express, then that's obviously doing a lot of good and just feels like a really good thing to do.
Yeah, because it's a bit like having a big sister or a friend to sort of look up to in a way, as in everybody is on a different journey, a different stage of their journey all the time. So we can all inspire and connect one another on our various different paths and journeys. And so there may be people further towards the beginning of their journey that might look at me and think, oh, I really want to try and get into more mindfulness and gratitude practice. She talks about journaling. I'm going to start to see if I can have a go. And then I can be looking at people that I'm like, wow, this person is a master of their mind and I want to become more like that. So we're all pulling and drawing inspiration and motivation from one another, I think, which is what I think is fantastic about social media and why I don't really have anything bad to say about it, because I think it's very positive on the whole for me.
So just going back a bit, because you talked, you know, very candidly about, you know, life from when you were sort of a teenager going to university and graduating and feel very, very lost. And that was, I would have thought, very early days of social media, probably before most of the platforms that we're using now. Could you imagine like the 18-year-old Joanna using Instagram or YouTube in a certain way? And what would have that have given her, perhaps? I know that's a bit of a funny question because you've got to think back, but would it have been helpful for you?
It's obviously not possible for me to say exactly, but I think it would have been a comfort to me because at times I did feel very isolated, and I would say quite a lot of anger and just feeling very, very lost in the world, very intimidated by the world, and very alone. And like I had to build up a resilience, like in order to leave the house to go to school in the morning, I used to have a bit of a routine I used to have to go through in my head, listening to certain songs that would give me enough kind of energy to be like, you can face it, you can go down to the bus stop, you can get on the bus, you can put up with any comments that are going to go your way today at school, you can cope with the looks and the intimidation. Like, I was a severely intimidated person. And I think that knowing that there were more people that were feeling like that, other than just my tiny little friendship group and the bravado that goes on when you're at school, I think it would have helped me. And I have got older sisters, and one sister in particular was quite comforting and trying to reassure me, but she was having her own struggles too. So it's like, if there were more strong characters that I could have met to sort of latch onto, I think I didn't have enough strong characters in my upbringing that really made me feel like I had a foundation. And and that's why I encountered quite a lot of problems.
And I love that idea of this, you know, social media being like this wonderful sisterhood. Or brotherhood, yeah. You know, for people to go, I don't have to know this person, but I can still look to what they're doing and saying, as long as they're, you know, they're honest with what they're talking about, and really take comfort from that and inspiration from that. I think that's a really wonderful way of looking at the massive benefits of social media, actually.
Yeah, like a big extended family, and that goes across so many different topics and areas for me. Like, I've got women that we have proper frank conversations, girl to girl, but because I spend a lot of my time, you know, we're in lockdown now, but I'm on the farm and working on the campsite most of the time. I lead quite an isolated lifestyle, so for me it's not that different, other than that people can't come and visit me here. I'm here quite a lot, so that's why I'm so active on social media, is that I can have chats with people. I've got a friend who's a swimmer from Cornwall. She's fantastic. I can just say to her, gosh, I'm feeling like this, and I really just need to tell somebody, and she'll make me feel better because we're all experiencing similar things at some different times. And then I've also got great farming contacts. And this lambing season, I've been sending photographs of particular things and saying, please just let me know what you think about this. What should I do? And getting almost immediate help and support. And that's, you know, from people that I've never met. Wow. And I think that is fantastic, because back in the day, when you were isolated on your farm with just a phone line, perhaps, and, you know, you're not going to be in the house if you're all farmers are out at the same time, aren't they? So it's really, really amazing that I can use social media to help me make decisions on the farm even.
Brilliant. And so this is not nicely moving us into kind of like future facing, because we're going to come out of this COVID world soon. We're going to, and things will change, and, you know, people are using terms like the new normality and whatever that's going to look like. But for you personally, and for, you know, the farm and the camping brand, what does the future hold? What are you looking forward to?
I'm certainly looking forward to getting back into the mountains and lakes at some point. I just really built up my open water swimming, not only my cold water tolerance, but my swim fitness. So I was gearing up for an event. I was really looking forward to hitting the open water and having some long swims. I wanted to swim the length of Coniston in the Lake District. And obviously haven't been, I think it's about 5 miles.
Wow.
I could be wrong. I think about 5 miles. So I was looking forward to doing things like that. And obviously I will hopefully get to do those things maybe later on this year. And then in terms of the business, I think I've just viewed it as being a pause. And when we can reopen again, I guess everyone will start to move around and I'll just be working really hard here, because fingers crossed people will be able to come camping and we'll be able to sort of salvage a bit of a season out of this year. If things go as I'm slightly anticipating, maybe by July people might be able to travel.
Yeah, and I've got a sense that the domestic tourism market might be really quite strong as well. What do you think? Is people more comfortable staying at home?
I agree. I think that I'm optimistic that we should be able to have a strong business going forwards. And I've mentioned about having this big investment recently. And I mean, the past 4 or 5 years have been 100% investment in terms of all of my time, all of my money, everything that's gone into getting to this point. So I think that for the future, I would like to be able to start to readdress that balance a little bit, maybe be able to get some help so that I'm not having to work 7 days a week, 14 hours a day, and be able to take a bit of time for myself. Because currently, during the summer months, sort of March to October, I'm pretty much working 7 days a week with no relief on that at all. Mm. So it's very intense. And then when we close for the winter, that's when I can get off and do things. But obviously the weather's not as favourable.
But you
can't have a big day in the mountains as easily when it's dark right. For more hours than it is light. But
it doesn't stop you chucking your bikes in the back of the van and driving to Italy and
exactly
down mountains.
We did have a great time. We were so lucky, actually. I can't believe how lucky we were. We had a lot of sunshine. There wasn't very much snow, so that enabled us to go on higher routes with the bikes that normally we wouldn't have been able to do. But I have skied before, and I would definitely at some point like to go skiing again, because that's a good feeling.
You've obviously done it before, and I've got a sense from, you know, your love of that, you know, tackling new adventures and going into quite challenging situations. you're gonna love the skiing.
Yeah.
You get a chance to do more of that.
Brilliant. Yeah.
So, Joanna, just tell us, if people, and I'm sure they will, want to find out more about the farm and your work, where's the best place for them to kind of find out more about you?
Well, pretty much everything that I'm eating, doing, moving, seeing, everything that's happening all goes on through my Instagram page, which is at Joanna Shimwell.
Yeah.
And that is just the central hub for everything that I am and what I'm doing, really. So that's probably the best place. And then if you like to watch videos, then yeah, I've got my own growing little YouTube channel, which is Dale Farm. That's fun. Yeah, my dad's on there. He features quite a bit, and everybody loves dad. They think he's such a good character, which he is, and he's completely true. Like, he couldn't be any different, you know.
Yeah.
he's just sort of real salt of the earth type character, and people really warm to him, so they enjoy seeing our relationship, which doesn't get shown as much through my Instagram.
Got it. And I'll put links to all of those, if people haven't found you already, on the show notes, so they can come and find you. So fabulous. And
cool.
Just my last question is, and we have touched on bits of this as we've gone through, but I'm always really fascinated, and especially people like you, you're very in touch with that balance, as you said, that harmony of mental and physical well-being. And so some other things maybe you haven't mentioned so far that you're doing for your mojo to keep it at that level? So you're at an 8, 8.5 today, maybe going even higher. How are you doing that?
So I boost my mojo. I also call it sometimes a vibration. I don't know, like, depends how spiritual you are. Mm. There's this idea of everyone being energy and having a vibrational frequency. Everything is energy. And I do get that. I believe that. And I think you can raise your frequency. You can raise your mojo. So I like to wear bright things. I don't really care whether it is clashing stripes, patterns, zigzags, all different colors, knitted things, socks, all sorts. I just wear all bright stuff because it boosts my mood. And it might boost somebody else's mood too if they see me and they're like, well, what is she wearing? I'm like, I just really like bright things. So you would not often see me dressed in head to toe black or grey because it puts me in a dull mood. So I'm always wearing bright stuff. I think that's great for your mojo.
Yeah.
Listening to music. I love to listen to music. I love to sing. I'm not particularly good at singing, but I'll sing anyway. Dancing. Again, not a professional dancer in any capacity, but I like to move my body, even if it's just jamming around the house. That makes me feel good. And also cooking. I like to prepare my own meals from scratch. And that gives me real sort of pleasure. I find it very therapeutic. Sometimes I just cook instinctively and I just grab ingredients and I don't even know what I'm making until I've kind of got halfway through it. And then in other times, I really want to be meticulous and I'm like measuring everything out to the exact gram and I'll bake a cake and it'll be like perfect.
Yeah.
And so it just depends on what my mood is, the kind of therapy that I need. It might be exact precision or it might be chuck it all together and see what on earth happens and how it is. And I find that brings me pleasure. And being able to share my food with people, it brings me joy. And that also helps me kind of raise my mojo because I'm quite a caring personality. And one of my ways of showing my care and love for people is to feed them.
Wow. I mean, it sounds like Dale Farm is a very hospitable place.
We haven't actually touched upon lamb love, but I wasn't going to recommend that because not everyone can do it. But if you give a lamb a cuddle, you can't be sad.
Well, we have not a lamb, but we have a little dog. He is white. He's about the size of maybe a month old lamb. And I get a huge amount of benefit from cuddling him. Get them as well. So that sort of that animal love, I completely get.
I can understand that. We have cats, and I sometimes think I need them more than they need me. I love that feeling of just an animal's love and relationship with you is so uncomplicated. I think that's why I love working with animals, is that they're not complicated, they're very straightforward. And so our own relationships and our own family relationships, personal relationships can be quite complex, can't they? Whereas animals are very simple, and I think that's very sometimes reassuring and comforting when you just need basic sort of love and affection.
Absolutely agree. I think we can learn a lot from animals for their sheer mindfulness because they're entirely present, aren't they? They're just thinking about now. They're not worried about what happened or thinking about the future. They are, where am I right now? Have I got what I need? Simple. Wonderful. Well, Joanna Shimwell, that was a wonderful conversation. I really appreciate your time at such a busy time as well.
I've really enjoyed it. I'm smiling now. Mojo is going up all the time.
I love to hear that when my guests say that. And I know that people listening are going to get a lot from this conversation. So, Joanna, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
It was great to chat to Joanna, and I was very thankful for her time as she was jumping between helping lambing and then moving into calving, plus working out how to navigate COVID-19 for her campsite business, as she talked about. What really struck me was just the level of work and commitment she engages in, which is not what one might always consider when thinking about social media creators. It's hard graft working on a farm and then finding time to build and engage with an audience online. It's really not straightforward. But you can tell she loves what she does and loves the demands of a physical challenge. And you can hear what that has done for her confidence and her mojo. All the links to Joanna's social media profiles and the farm's YouTube are in the show notes. So if you like videos of newborn lambs, this is for you. But do be warned, just like with Joanna's own life, she doesn't offer a sugar-coated view of farm life. It's honest and very real. We talk a lot in the episode about inspiring people through Joanna's Instagram and YouTube work, and you too can help inspire more people by sharing this podcast with more friends and family. And please do three really easy things for me. If you like what you hear, subscribe and you'll hear new episodes each week. Please leave a 5-star rating and the all-important short review on Apple iTunes, which really helps the Mojo podcast become more discoverable to more people. Until next week, I hope your mojo continues to flow.